What the fuck is up, ladies and gents, non-binary, queer, or whatever the fuck. All of you are cool, though, so if you're listening to this, you're at least dope. It is a new year, and I did some shit on New Year's, like hanging out with some traveling politicos, and then working, because I'm in the entertainment industry, and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day are just other days for me. But that doesn't matter. The concert was cool. It was a decent-sized bro country concert, so, you know, the fucking view at the concert was good. Lots of attractive women's going, "Oh my god! He's so pretty! And he sings, like, country songs about living and fucking his truck, yes!" But anyway, I am the Dissident in Chief, and this is the Dissident in Chief podcast. I'm JP. Yeah, if you haven't already subscribed to my Twitter, like, go ahead, at DissInChief on Twitter. I'm funny there. If you want to, follow me on TikTok, because stay tuned, because I'm going to have some original content coming out there. Some rants, some funny shit, like, at least until I get banned, because they're even more ban-happy than fucking Twitter is, so be careful with them. So David Fite, I want to do a long intro for you, but I'm not, because there's show notes. But what is your typical plans for fucking New Year's? Are you the type to be like, "I'm going to go out and fucking rage, party hard, coke and hookers," or are you like, "Fuck this day, I'm going to fucking stay home, it's just another fucking day"? Like, what's your thing?
I've been all over the map on that one the last few years. I'm normally more of a chill person when it comes to the holidays in the winter, like Christmas and New Year's. I'm more of a get drunk at home with some eggnog and some champagne and watch the fucking Dick Clark New Year's Rockin' Eve, even though it's corny as shit. My parents fucking love that, and I'm usually home for the holidays, just because, especially with my birthday being 3 days before New Year's, like, that whole week of celebration, I'm almost always still in this house, no matter where I live. So that's been the plan. It's really weird, though, because so 2021, you know, I was here. The New Year of 2020 was like the lamest midnight of my entire life. I literally didn't even notice midnight happened when 2020 started. I was watching hockey highlights with this like 17-year-old kid who's like friends of the supporter that I was staying with in New Hampshire. We were just like sitting there watching fucking ESPN. We noticed it's like quarter after, and we're like, "Oh, hey, happy New Year." So basically anything will be more exciting than that. So I'm just like, even though this year was really chill, it was still significantly more exciting than last year.
Yeah, last year I didn't do jack shit. I literally just fucking stayed home. But then again, like, I also didn't really want to go out, and there were no, like, big gigs to do. So it was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Just fucking go party and drink? Which, I mean, that's fine and all, but I didn't want to do it that year, so I kind of just took it off, which is rare for me. So, also, it is the beginning of the year, and you know what that means. It's the anniversary of the greatest day of all time, where several congressmen shit their pants and made all of us fucking anarchists super happy. And that is January 6th, baby.
You did not just do that.
How the fuck are you gonna celebrate the greatest day of all time, according to like 15 QAnon people, you know?
Yeah, it is really interesting. I'm remembering what this week was like last year and the lead up to it and the conversations were happening, and then the actual sixth and the aftermath of it. It was really interesting. I watched this like mockumentary on Netflix last night called Death to 2021. It was really, really cringe. Extremely biased and bullshit. But fucking hilarious in some ways. And I had kind of just like, I forgot how like chill it was there for a minute, and then January 6th. Like, there was, like, a little bit of a lull just before January 6th where it was like, hey, all right, Biden won. It's just going to go back to the sleepy times, and everyone's just going to forget about all the hysteria, and they're going to, like, they did the thing with COVID. Like, they're going to, like, everybody thought it was going to go back to normal last year. And then all of a sudden, shit hit the freaking fan, and last year turned interesting instead. Everybody thought it was going to be boring.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure you have, like, all the memes, all the good ones stockpiled and ready to go for that day. Are you going to be, like, one of those guys that's going to be on Twitter all day just living life, trolling people? Making fun of people who can compare it to, like, 9/11s or whatever the fuck. Like, those types. Because that's what I'm going to do is I'm going to find, like, the cringiest, most, like, stupid takes. And then just fucking troll them all day. It's going to be great.
That is probably a good idea for my, like, engagement and my following. That's for sure. I'll admit, I'm not always the best at the quick comebacks. I'm better in person with that kind of stuff. And, like, vocally. For some reason on Twitter, the, like, hot takes and the like, quirky comebacks aren't my strength. So normally on days like that, or, like, on John McCain death day, I just kind of chill out following my friends like Reed Coverdale or Caitlin Cloven. They both do some really solid shit posting, and I just like and retweet what they're doing.
Yeah, and then there's going to be a lot of fucking delusional people that are going to, like, be on there and be like, this is why we need the January 6th commission, and it's because of all these trolls on Twitter that are talking shit about their invasion, the unplanned walkthrough of the Capitol. I'm already seeing it. It's going to be great. I'm going to be so happy. It's going to be great. And I'm probably going to get blocked by a lot of people, and fuck them. It's going to be great. And speaking of fucking delusional, AOC... and apparently how every old Republican wants to sleep with her because she's an enemy, and that's the only legitimate critique is that they deeply want to, like, sleep with her, and that's why they attack her so much.
Did she say that?
What is your feeling about that? Pretty much. Like, let me pull the tweet up real quick. It's quite fantastic.
I mean, I do want to sleep with her. That's accurate.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, but not all of her opponents, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's kind of an insane assumption to make of people. I mean, she does have this, like, she does have this way about her that is extremely attractive. Like, there's something about crazy bitches, you know?
And the crazy eyes. The eyes. Oh, here it is. Found it. The first one is, if Republicans are mad, they can't date me. They can just say that instead of projecting their sexual frustrations onto my boyfriend's feet. You creepy weirdos.
That's honestly hilarious.
It's starting to get old ignoring the very obvious, strange, and deranged sexual frustrations that underpin the Republican fixation on me, women, and LGBT plus people in general. These people clearly need therapy, won't do it, and use politics as their outlet instead. It's really weird. Because that's...
I'm actually going to say I don't disagree with that take. I think that... I mean, she's over-exaggerating a little bit, but I think she's... I don't think she's wrong. I think a solid majority of the Republicans in office right now are sexually frustrated, basically incels, who are either actual incels or they're in, like, unloving marriages where there's nothing actually going on, and they're taking their sexual and emotional frustrations out on the entire fucking country. I think that's pretty accurate.
Like a giant batch of people that just need to get fucking laid.
Yeah, dude. If someone just, like, pumped cannabis smoke into the halls of Congress, got everyone stoned, put a little bit of Molly in the water supply in Congress, got everyone a little rolling, just a little bit, and they all just had an orgy, like, the country would be thousands of times better going forward.
Well, that's the second guess I thought pumping into the Capitol would solve problems with, but I'll go with that because I don't want to get an FBI warrant. And then, what was it? Oh, yeah, they had your favorite Jewish space lasers. She fucking is gone now. Which kind of, honestly, for me, is kind of like a, well, that's about right. Because she's kind of crazy.
She is kind of crazy. So, actually, I want to rant about that real quick, if I may.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Like, we need to ask ourselves why the topic of big tech censorship is trending so hard this week for Marjorie Taylor Greene and did nothing 2 weeks ago when Dr. Robert Malone got banned from Twitter. He is the inventor of the mRNA technology. He had over 500,000 followers on Twitter when his account got suspended. He was... like, nothing that he was putting out has been disproven in any way, shape, or form. None of the doctors that are trying to, like, malign his character are willing to debate him or talk to him in any sort of public setting. And they removed him from multiple social media platforms. And some people said stuff. And then he went on Joe Rogan, like, 2 days later. And so that was kind of the whole conversation was like, oh, this guy got banned from Twitter. Now he's going on Joe Rogan. Go watch the episode. Like, it was all, like, the only thing that I saw that was talking about him getting banned from Twitter was to promote the Rogan episode. Which, like, no disrespect to Rogan, like, do your thing, and, like, all of his fans that were helping pump that episode, like, good on you. Got over 40 million views in the first 48 hours. Like, it was amazing. But, like, no one gave a shit about big tech censorship. Getter didn't get 150,000 people the day that he got banned. It's all over this bullshit, partisan, controlled opposition insanity, like Marjorie Taylor Greene or Trump or Alex Jones or whoever else they want to ban from the quote-unquote far right, and they're using these people as an excuse to ban the actual good people who are going against their narratives that they don't like, and being able to ban, like, actual medical doctors who we need to be hearing from in these times, and no one's paying attention to that because they've got us fixated on this left-right Republican-Democrat space lasers versus boosters, like, fucking bullshit, and it's insane how many people, like, that I respect and care about are falling for this same bullshit.
Oh, yeah, like, the banning of Dr. Malone was so much worse than fucking Marjorie Taylor Greene, like, and then it's kind of amazing, like, and then you fucking go on the podcast and he drops like 3 hours of just fucking, it was basically just like ketamine for fucking dissidents and anarchists and anyone that's against the narrative of what's going on right now. Like, dude was dropping some straight knowledge, and that I don't know, man, that episode was super damn important as far as I'm concerned, the one he did with Rogan. And then, of course, it just happened that he had gotten banned like 2 or 3 days before that. So it's about as fucking perfectly timed as it could be. Yeah. And that was much more of a egregious banning than fucking Marjorie Taylor Greene.
And yeah, and
I think you're pretty correct to say that it was some partisan bullshit and all that.
And I'll even admit that, like, my criticism of the conversation about Malone was entirely hypocritical, because the only post I made about it also mentioned the Rogan episode. So, like, I'm part of what I'm talking about here. And, like, I didn't get a Getter account until yesterday when everybody else did. So, like, I'm not innocent in this at all. Like, I kind of fell for that same timeline, and it pisses me off that so many people are talking about it now because of her, and, like, arguing that, like, she shouldn't have been removed, which, like, fuck it. I think that government officials should be like allowed to be on these kinds of platforms, and it's unsafe to remove them from this kind of public discourse. However, I don't really give a shit about Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's a psycho. So like, I'm not gonna like fight for her or defend her or anything like that. That's stupid.
No, I'm not gonna go out of my way to defend her, but at the same time, it's like, I'd rather have government officials up. I'd rather have a platform where all government officials are on versus where they control the opposition, or they can, or they get rid of anyone that they deem to be too far. I'd rather have one where they're there and rather than they're not, in my opinion.
Yeah, and like a lot of people are making the argument that, like, you know, I would rather live in a society where public officials can be kicked off of private property rather than one where they're like forced to remain on it, which, like, I understand that argument. Like, if we're talking about Twitter like it was an actual place, right, which is,
and an actual private company
also, that's another great conversation. But let's even just talk about the, because a lot of people are making this argument as if Twitter was a place, right, and they're talking about it like private property, like it's property. In most states, not all, your state is actually an exclusion from this, but in most states, if Twitter was a place, it would be considered public property. I would be able to petition there. I would be able to do a political rally there. I would be able to do a march or protest or whatever completely legally under the First Amendment. Most states have deemed that even private property that is open to the public and free to public use is deemed public property for the sake of political free speech. And I've had to like dig into that through the petitioning and canvassing work that I've done, because I need to know where I can petition and canvass. So like Texas is obnoxious because this loophole doesn't exist, and Walmart can actually have me arrested for petitioning out front their storefront. Most states like California, New York, Michigan, like all the other places, that actually every other state that I've been in the last 2 years, this little loophole exists, and I can petition in front of Walmart or at a mall or wherever I want, for the most part, if it's public property. So even like by most state standards, Twitter is public property that falls under like First Amendment free speech laws. And then we can get into what you just mentioned about how it's not only heavily subsidized by government, it's also has like patents protected by government and like government enforced monopolies. And then on top of that, it's used as a tool by government. It has specific government agencies working with it. Like it, once you start having like official government accounts on this app, and like they're flagged differently and they work differently and they treat government differently than everybody else, and they're working with the government and they're working with the fact checkers and they're doing all this stuff, it's no longer private. It's part of the cathedral, and it's evil, and it needs to die.
Yeah, it was very interesting hearing, quote-unquote, like, libertarian people getting mad, because when you criticize people getting taken off, they're like, oh, it's a private company, bro. And I'm like, yeah, it's about as private of a company as fucking Post Office. Like, let's be real here.
It's about as,
like,
private of a company as the Federal Reserve.
Even better.
Which is a private organization, for the record.
Yes, like, we know that, and then, of course, most of the people listening to this probably know Federal Reserve is private, but, yeah, like, Twitter is, and Facebook and all of them is, they're, again, I made that point where it's like, yeah, they're about as private as the fucking Post Office, because everyone knows that, like, yeah, they're technically a private company, but they absolutely take like subsidies, government things and contracts and all this other shit, and they work with the government and all this other shit. So
yeah,
that's where I came from it on.
One thing that has really annoyed me lately with Twitter, and I think this specific issue highlighted it for me. I like saw multiple posts and threads that pointed this out. Libertarians have a habit of posting things to troll duopoly people, and then having libertarians from the quote-unquote opposite side like assume that they're trying to troll them and get defensive, And then, like, vice versa, like, and both sides do it simultaneously. So then there becomes an argument within the LP that matches the argument that's going on outside. And the libertarians are just assuming unlibertarian takes from other libertarians. And it's dumb. So, like, LP Texas tweeted out, Twitter actually is a private company, right? And everybody was trolling them. But I don't think that LP Texas was trying to troll the libertarians who were making the logical stances that us libertarians were making. They were trolling the right-wing retards who were literally calling for, like, government intervention in this, which no libertarian was. Or pretty much, like, none that I saw, at least. No libertarian was like, the government should regulate this and make sure that, like, MTG couldn't have gotten banned. I didn't see anyone making that take. But there were a bunch of Republicans that were making that take. So I think LP Texas was talking to those Republicans, not the libertarians. But the libertarians got defensive and started shitting on LP Texas for this take and assuming an unlibertarian take, even though they know... fuck, I don't remember his name. The guy that runs LP Texas's Twitter is cool. He's on Clubhouse with us all the time, and I'm spacing on his freaking name. But, like, I always give them the benefit of the doubt because I know that the Twitter's run by a good libertarian, and sometimes they have shit takes. But I assume that it's a good libertarian making a shit take, not a statist making a statist take. And same with, like, the lefties, quote-unquote. I'm doing air quotes, and I know that nobody can see that. The same goes with, like, the lefties that were looking at some of the right-wing takes in this. Like, there were a lot of intentionally vague posts trolling lefties that triggered a bunch of left libertarians. And if taken out of context and assumed that this person was a Republican instead of a libertarian, maybe these were statist bullshit takes. But if you know that this person is a libertarian and you just assume that their take is coming from a libertarian stance primarily, there's nothing to get upset about. And if we just could, like, assume that most libertarians are good libertarians and move forward from there, Twitter would be so much better of a place.
Interesting.
Sorry, that was a lot.
I mean, I do like the idea that, obviously, I'm a fan of trolling, so, like, I feel the spirit of that. It is interesting, though, that you do bring up a good point that a lot of the libertarians would dogpile on the state party Twitter, and then assuming that the take is bad and it's not them fucking trolling right wingers or commies or whatever. Like, that is a good point. I haven't really thought of it that way, so that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because The problem is that there are people on Twitter that do troll that are libertarians that exist solely to troll other libertarians and subtweet other libertarians and shit on other libertarians. And so they kind of muck that up because they get in the middle and it's hard to tell the difference between someone who's trolling a right winger and someone who's trolling right libertarians because they sound the same a lot of times. But that's why you got to get to know these people a little bit, you know. Click if you see a take that sounds like maybe it could be right if you change the context up, but comes off awful, click on the profile, read their bio. If it says libertarian or anarchist or something like that, automatically earns points. Assume that they're coming from a decent place. Read down a couple of tweets. If all of their tweets are, like, really obnoxious and shitty takes, then okay, maybe they're a bad libertarian. Maybe it's time to dunk on them. But if the rest of their fucking profile is great and you agree with 90% of what they're posting, maybe just assume that this was a bad take or poorly worded or misunderstood or taken out of context, and don't dogpile on a fellow libertarian.
Did you just solve, like, the caucus warfare in, like, fucking 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes here? And then there's some people that could take that to fucking heart on both the Riri lefty libertarian side and the fucking Mises cuck side. Like, you would think that both sides could take that lesson and be like, hey, you know that enemy? He's probably fine. Just move on and then go to something else.
Yeah, we say constantly that, like, oh, so-and-so is great in person, but they're obnoxious online. And, like I blocked somebody the other day who I'm actually good friends with in person. He goes by Black Mutualist on Twitter. His name's Ramon. He's actually a great guy. We hung out at the YalCon, Rev 2021, and we literally, like, broke into a water park together. It was great. But I blocked him on Twitter the other day because he's fucking obnoxious on there. And we talk about people a lot like that. And there's plenty of my good friends that I, like, have muted or unfollowed previously. We should just, like, we should take that that fact, like, that we know that pretty much everyone is better in person than they are on Twitter, and take that just a logical step further and be like, the person that they are in person is actually them, right? Like, that's, you're getting a more accurate view of them when you see them in person. So that quote unquote worst person that they are on Twitter is Twitter making them look bad and not an actual representation of those people. And so if you don't know them in person, you can pretty clearly make the assumption, regardless of who they are, even if they're the most obnoxious, like, tanky, lefty, like, AOC-supporting whatever the fuck, you can assume that pretty much everyone you're interacting with on Twitter is a better person than what they seem like on Twitter. It's like the opposite of Instagram.
The opposite, because, yeah, someone like me does... Oh my god, we definitely use Instagram over here.
Well, like, Instagram is like the like best version of yourself, right? You're always trying to make yourself look more attractive and, like, you're having more fun, and it's only, like, the highlights of your life that go on Instagram. It's like all of your shittiest takes, most, like, annoyed arguments, and, like, most drunken rants is what's on Twitter. It's like the worst of you, always.
Yeah, and then it is interesting how you bring up, like, oh, I'm, like, really good homies with this guy in real life, but, like, he's insufferable on fucking Twitter. And then my theory is that the incentives line up in a certain way on your end, and the incentives line up in a certain other way on his end. So it's kind of, like, inevitable that he's never going to cede, and you're never going to cede, at least on certain points. So it's kind of like a brick wall meets a... like an immovable object meets an unstoppable force type of situation. You know what I mean?
I blocked him after I won an argument with him, because I actually won an argument with him, which is a rare thing to say about him and Twitter in general. That, like, this conversation ended with a, I think you're right. But...
like, fuck you, you're right, but fuck you, kind of.
But I blocked him because we spent 4 hours arguing, only for him to finally actually look up what we were talking about and realize he was wrong. Like, he argued with me for 4 hours, not having a clue what he was talking about, because he was trying to say that Nick Fuentes and Dave Smith agree on, like, most things. And I was like, no, that's just not true. There's a reason that they debated the other day, and, like, there's a bunch of things, like, they disagree on.
Yeah, like, even the most, like, the biggest Dave Smith hater is like, yeah, I think you're a little you're exaggerating a little bit there,
right? Well, so he was wrong doubly, which is one of the reasons why it took so long, because he was wrong about Dave's opinions and Nick's opinions. He thought Nick was more libertarian than he is, and thought Dave was less libertarian than he was. So I had to disprove both of those things, and that's why it took 4 hours, because I took a little bit of a break in the middle where he was arguing with somebody else. But I had to challenge him on the Dave stuff, which he fought like every Dave hater does. But then I finally, like somebody else sent a good link that broke down Fuentes' stances, and he was like, oh, shit, this guy is, like, actually just horrible, and nothing like any, like, right-wing libertarian, so I'm just wrong, sorry guys. And I was just like, you're too annoying. Like, I can't, I blocked him out of, like, a lead me from temptation thing, because this guy likes to interact with me, and he just, like, triggers me in a way that I just, I'm just not trying to have it. I'm not trying to waste that much time arguing with morons online. So I don't even know if I blocked him. I think I just muted him just so I won't see this stuff and want to engage.
I mean, like, when you're telling him, like, 4 hours into a conversation, he finally looks up the fucking thing that he's arguing about, and he's like, oh, shit, I'm wrong. Yeah, thanks for wasting 4 hours of my fucking life. I told you right out of the fucking gate that you were wrong on that, and you should look it up. And you finally get to it, and hundreds of messages fucking later, I can't deal with people like that. It's just like, come on, man. Like, if you're going to be, like, figure it out quicker. I don't know. It's like, it makes no sense where it's like, or when people are arguing about, like, context and words, it's just like, God damn it. Like, you can take context however you fucking want to. It's like a dick. You can take it as deep as you want to go. Like, that's how this works. Like, just because you see context somewhere doesn't mean there actually is context, or someone else won't see the context. So maybe I'm just like a fucking transphobic, racist, homophobic, ableist. What's the other one? Fuck, I can't remember.
Misogynistic. I'm trying to
remember all the slurs. There we go.
Some of those anti-woman, you very much all that are. Shit. But that's okay. We can still be
but
friends.
But only the good ones in the best way, okay? Only in the best way do I hate women. Only in the bedroom, but only for a certain little bit.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Jesus Christ.
Only when they like
I'm not going to get fucking... I'm telling you, man, you've seen it. You've seen some of the freaks out there that are like, fucking,
bro, I'm
like,
in the Liberty spank movement.
Me, take control. Like,
shit, I just name-dropped one of them earlier on this episode. it's a good thing I know that she doesn't listen to podcasts and won't ever hear this.
Good luck finding out who that is. Good luck finding out which person he's talking about, because I do.
I've only name-dropped a couple of people so far. It was definitely Dave Smith.
yeah, the kinky motherfucker.
Yo, knew I would not be surprised if Dave Smith is a sub in the bedroom.
I mean, we could speculate about Dave Smith's sex life and get him really fucking happy with us. Oh, yeah.
Or at least a switch. Which, like, no hate, so am I. But, yeah.
My sub or dom preference is yes. So, I don't know. Whatever, I'd go with the flow. And literally the flow could be whatever. Unless you're putting something in my ass where I kind of like go, okay, we're going to stop there. Maybe a little bit before sticking things up my ass. We'll stop there. But then everything else, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I feel you. That's about the same. man, didn't think we were going to talk about that today.
I will say, though, that you've had more experience doing this than me, but, like, when you go and meet people that are, like, relatively famous and for, like, lunch or dinner or whatever, like I did on the 31st of last month, yeah, on New Year's Eve, went and hung out with some people that are, like, relatively, like, prominent, like, and then you meet them in person and you know their public personality and it's kind of interesting, like, what's your experience with that? And like, because you do it a lot more than me.
So last year I had a decent amount of like meeting people, and most of them I had on the show before I met them in person, so that helped. Or at least I talked to them on Clubhouse. Lengthily online. Probably the coldest meet that I had in 2021 was Justin Amash. But even he like recognized my name and like knew who I was from like Twitter and Clubhouse. And, It's weird. It's like, I don't know how to fully like put it into words. It's very weird to have people that you've respected for like very long periods of time, like know who you are and interact with you in like an almost like colleague, like equals kind of a mentality. The weirdest one with that was Spike Cohen. Like over this year, I went from like not knowing who he was at all. When he got the nomination, I was completely unaware of who he was as a person. And then now I consider him one of my better friends. And that's kind of strange, like that I like know him and his wife and like have just spent hours and hours talking to them just privately. And it's so much fun to get to know people like behind the scenes and who they really are and then match that with who they are in public. It's fun to see how... I feel like for me, the people that I respect and like the most are the people that there is no difference. So like Spike, the only difference between public Spike and private Spike is that he is a lot more racist in private.
Boom. There we go.
but like you can get.
I'm sure his black wife really appreciates mm-hmm. that.
I mean, he's the most anti-Semitic person I've ever met. And I mean that. Like, he makes more Jew jokes than anyone else I know. That includes Reed Coverdale.
Yeah, I'm about to say the fucking anti-Semite Spike Cohen. I knew it.
Right. I mean, obviously, it's all jokes. He's not actually a racist or an anti-Semite or anything like that. But you can even get the feel, though, from his public persona that he probably is the type of person to have, like, a no-holds-barred sense of humor in private, and like it's obvious why you don't say that kind of stuff publicly as a politician, but he's pretty much like, other than that, other than like the smart things like that, he's the same when he's on a podcast or doing a speech or something like that. Like, he's himself. He is unapologetically Spike, and that's one of the things that I love the most about him. And I got the same thing with Tulsi last in 2020, and she's awesome, and she's like the exact same person on a podcast as she is in her van driving to an event, and she's just an awesome, genuine, wholesome person. So like, those are the kind of people that I like to be around. There are others who, like, you can see them flip the switch, and that's very much off-putting, but I won't name names on that one. Other people that are awesome, both in person and online, are Shane Hazel and Scott Horton. I got to meet both of them multiple times this past year. And Scott Horton is a fucking beast. I love that guy so much. He is an inspiration. And I got to hang out with him at the New York State Convention. And he just went on a rant, just like an unprovoked, like, 10-minute rant to a group of us about, like, the sectarian, like, dividing bullshit going on in the Libertarian Party. Like, we were talking about Dave Smith blocking me, and like, which he brought up. I didn't bring it up. I wasn't like, oh, Dave blocked me. Like, I'm not that kind of a person. Scott brought it up because Dave was talking about me on his podcast the night previously and said that he had blocked me. And Scott brought it up and then just went into this rant about how fucking petty and stupid all of this is, and how bullshit it is that Dave blocked me, how bullshit it is that I was arguing with him in the first place to get blocked, and how bullshit, like, all of it is. And it was beautiful.
And now a word from our sponsor, Pfizer / Moderna. Get the jab, motherfucker.
Yo, Pfizer, if you're listening, I would definitely take a sponsorship for my show.
I'll take your fucking blood money. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it.
Which, you're giving us plenty of fucking V's over here, but definitely not in fucking Africa, because you don't like skinny African starving people either. We get it. It's fine. Neither does our foreign policy doesn't like brown or black people either. It's cool. You're just going with the flow, okay?
Jesus Christ.
It's a Pfizer / Pfizer BioNTech. Is that what it is? I think that's their full name.
I am.
You would
unsure.
Think I'd know that by now, but that's their full company name, and they sponsor goddamn everything. So why not sponsor me? Fuck it, I'll take some blood money. So the question, though, after my ad break, is that speaking of like COVID regime and all that stuff, I've been noticing that the narrative has been like falling apart for the most part, at least on the government's end, that they keep backpedaling. Like, do you see the same thing I'm seeing where they're just going like, fuck, we actually gotta like roll this back a little bit or we're gonna get just fucking slaughterhouse killed in the midterms and everything? Well, yeah, but like, do you think that it's legitimately, do you think they're actually going like, fuck, like we gotta backpedal a little bit? And how much more do you think they're actually gonna backpedal over the next month or two? Because I think it's gonna be a lot more than what some people are doing. They're gonna ease back a lot more.
I think it depends heavily on three things, I'll say. First being the actual case numbers and death numbers. If we see the drop off in the spring that we normally see in all diseases, including the flu and the cold and like anything else that's followed similar trend lines as COVID, if we get that drastic drop like we did last year, I think that they're more likely to roll back. If we don't see that, if like we see a new variant or something like that come out in March or early April that even with low death numbers has high case numbers that can justify any type of anything, I don't think we'll see the type of rollbacks that you're talking about.
Even with the midterms coming up where you know that having lockdowns on as the fucking plank of your party is probably not going to fucking work. Or shutting down schools and all this other shit, which they're doing in New York again, but yeah.
So, actually, what's kind of funny, the biggest walk back that we were seeing is the idea that the federal government can do something, right? Like, Biden just said that there is no national plan for COVID, right? So that's the spin that they're taking to save the midterms, because the states with gubernatorial elections next year, very few of them are swing states. Very few of those gubernatorial races are gonna really be challenged from either side. They're probably gonna stay the same. There's like three races that are like any kind of anything. So no one's really worried about that. They are worried about the midterms. However, if they shift focus to state policy and state action and shift everything to like, oh, the states are handling this, it leaves the Congress people completely unresponsible for what happens. And
unencumbered by like problem policy and shit.
Exactly. They get to vote, like the Democrats get to make climate change, access, like voter access, larger enrollment, like that kind of thing that they've been doing for the last couple of years, which actually for the most part I support. Maybe like ranked choice voting, stuff like they get to make those things their main platform pieces and kind of ignore COVID if it goes to shit. But if it gets better, they get to still take credit for it. So it's a best of both worlds scenario.
Yeah, it's I honestly, my lizard brain is thinking that, okay, with the whole like admission that there is no federal response that's going to be enough to get COVID out of there, I also think they're going to be starting to roll back some of the egregious shit, because there's not going to be any new variants that come out that just like are really fucking fatal compared to, especially, it's not going to get any worse than Omicron, which is, yeah, infecting a lot of people, but not really dropping people like flies or anything. So I think they're going to be moving on to climate change over the next year. We already saw the fucking, they're prepping already. And then they also had that movie, Don't Look Up, that was climate change fucking propaganda.
That was so a it's good kind movie. Of like
fucking
that was a well
it
done
was funny
movie.
It was pretty funny, but it was clearly fucking like, as you know, clearly fucking climate change like propaganda.
I think that it can be taken various ways. Like, if you can imprint about a half a dozen different like political takes on the movie from different angles. I was really trying to watch it like open-minded and just watch it for the movie and not try to imprint anything over it, because like I'd heard so many different takes about the movie previously to watching it that I was just really trying to watch with an open mind. And you know, I think that you can look at it from like a government silencing the truth kind of a perspective. And if you want to like take it and imprint it over COVID, it would be very clear which side is the pro-vax and which side is the anti-vax side of COVID when you're watching that movie. Clearly the pro-vax is the government narrative that's, you know, the don't look up, just like ignore the facts. We're just going to keep doing the thing and we're like, everything's going to be okay if you just trust us. Like, even though we're complete fucking morons. And so I think that there's a possibility that a number of people watched that movie and were like, you know what? This actually does kind of sound like how it would work. And maybe we should look into some alternative like sources of information besides just mainstream media and the government when it comes to like science and stuff, because maybe we can't trust NASA on space science and maybe that means we can't trust the FDA on medical science.
Yeah, the only other thing that it seemed pretty apparent that they were just like making fun of and ridiculing was rank partisanship.
Mm.
So, and also the I did put sunglasses on just now, but it's also, as you could tell,
the sun's coming through. There's no video. Yeah.
My blinds, and it's just, I have to put these on because it's getting insufferable.
Yeah, it looks horrible. You were trying to like dodge it there for a bit, and then you just gave up and threw the shades on. I respect that.
Yeah, like even though it makes me look like a fucking douchebag, mm-hmm. like it.
It really does.
I need these because there's only one place in my house that I can have this desk. And then it's literally right by a fucking window with blinds. And then in the middle of the day, it's just fucking blaring in and fucking blinding me. So I just gave up.
You guys listening are missing out on a great, great view. They're like the wraparound kind of sports sunglasses. He looks like a full blown douchebag. It's great.
I want to go out there. I need to do like the fucking thing and wear the Oakleys, beat my wife, and then wear jorts. Like, that's what I got to go with now.
Hmm. That's a vibe. Wife beater and jorts. That used to be a look.
No,
of
not
mine.
Like the shirt. The wife beater, but actually being like a wife beater, but only because she needs discipline.
Well,
okay?
You need to wear the shirt if you're gonna do the thing, especially if you're gonna wear jorts. Like, just go full chomo.
I gotta go like fucking. No, I can't do chomos. My glasses make me too racist for that, so I have to go with John Cena.
Oh, okay, that's fair. That's fair. but yeah, I think Don't Look Up was great.
That entire spiel we just did is going to get us canceled, so woo!
Bro.
But
I'm not famous enough to get canceled, and I think by the time I do get famous, I will be in the uncancelable category just because I've already said so much shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, your fucking Twitter is, like, I mean, it's not the most famous, but, like, you got, like, fucking multi-thousands of people that literally see your every fucking high thought, fucking bitch, and everything in between. Like, how is that? Because it seems like it would be, it's not quite enough to where it's like, oh my god, this is unmanageable, but, like, every time you put something out, you're just like, oh, I got, like, 10 likes. Oh, if I put out something really good or really stupid, it gets like fucking 1,000 or 2,000 likes, and you're like, fucking hell.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because, like, yeah, I'm in that medium category where, like, I can have tweets by themselves go like semi-viral, but it's not crazy. like most of my tweets only get like 10 to 20 likes. And it's, you know, I can keep up with all the replies and whatnot. I've got like 30, a little under 3,500 followers. So it's like, it's not crazy. It's pretty manageable. But when I do have a tweet that goes semi-viral, it makes me terrified for what it's going to be like when I do actually get into like 10 to 15,000 follower range, like some of my friends. And it's interesting because like it gets unmanageable there for a little bit. Like I had, I did a bad thing and Twitter actually got really mad at me for it. One of my friends posted a video of Justin Trudeau he was talking about the notwithstanding clause in the Canadian Charter, which I don't fully understand, but it's a clause that was added when the Charter was amended or rewritten or whatever, back when his dad was Prime Minister, that like there's a big problem with, and a lot of people don't like this clause. But the clip that was taken was really disingenuous, and it says... he's talking about a loophole that allows the majority to override the fundamental rights of the minority. And he was talking about this Muslim teacher that lost her job for wearing a hijab, which, you know, people can have their opinions on it, but like that's what he was actually talking about. But the clip, completely out of context, you assume that he's just being like, he's saying the quiet part out loud and being a dick about COVID and just being like, hey, we can do this. Like, it doesn't matter if you have rights. We're going to do this anyway. And so all I said was, this dude just explained why democracy sucks in 23 seconds flat. And then it went semi-viral. And I've looked up the stats. 90 to 95% of all of the views on this video came from my tweet. Which was over, like, it was about 250,000 impressions and over 100,000 individual viewers. A lot of people saw this video, a lot of people got mad, and like there was like mainstream media like articles written about this video and how like it was disingenuous and manipulated media, and I got like a manipulated media tag on Twitter, and it was a shit storm for like 4 days. There was just so many replies and quote tweets and everything, and like arguments going on about like, because I talked about democracy, and so like the arguments and the replies were mostly like, is democracy good or bad, and a bunch of like idiot nationalists being like, oh, democracy is great, this isn't democracy, we have a representative, like a bunch of people, like Republicans being there like, this is why we have a representative republic. And I was like, how's that working out for you? How are your rights doing? Like, fuck off, like it's just as bad. So I'm terrified of what my life is going to be like if I have 10,000 followers and I'm still running my own Twitter and that's like a daily occurrence. Sounds horrible. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah, it must be pretty awful that like you made a point that pretty much no matter, it made the point whether or not it's taken out of context that you're like, right. Yeah, fucking democracy is a little sus.
That's why I didn't take it down. I posted the full context. I like clarified, but I didn't take it down because I thought my take still stood and that video still shows why democracy sucks. But yeah, I feel a little bad.
Yeah, but then you have the democracy simps and the fucking and lovers and haters. Well, mostly lovers, and your replies going like, ew, like democracy is the greatest. Unless we don't get our way, then it's the worst because we're Democrats. And this, which they proved when they fucking had, they got all bitchy at fucking Joe Manchin about fucking not voting for Build Back Better, and then they're bitching about like, oh, does West Virginia get a fucking seat at the table? And it's like, well, majority rules, and then you vote for people in the state, and then they fucking have a senator go along with another part of the wing of the Senate. Like, that's how this shit fucking works. Like, what are you complaining about
here? That's how a representative republic works. To be fair, in their defense, in like a democracy fan Democrat defense. If we had democracy, Build Back Better would have passed.
Yeah, it would have. If we had had like a straight fucking democracy, it would have. But then again, that's why I'm not a fan of
democracy.
Straight democracy. Right.
That, like,
and I say this looking like a fucking like Jigsaw's like fucking fat like cousin over here. Do you want to play a game, kind of motherfucker? Like, this is quite a vibe. Like, I took a picture of it already and putting it on Twitter later. But this is way more obnoxious than it seems. Like, this is actually, it's not the worst, but like, it's definitely weird.
Oh my gosh.
This is why later on this year, at some point, ladies and gentlemen, non-binary, queer, not queer, that you're going to be getting me on video at some point, is that you'll understand the vibes that are happening right now, and you can see the vibe in person.
That better be on Free Speech Media when it happens.
Oh yeah, speaking of, damn, look at your fucking transitions on my show? Mm. What? Hell yeah. Well, tell me about fucking Free Speech Media. What the fuck is it? And you gotta tell me. Is this, it sounds like something you would run or be a part of, David. Why not tell me?
So Free Speech Media is a media network that was, it was started by my friends Roger and Harrison. And I became one of the owners a little over a year ago. No, that's not, that can't be true. Holy shit, that's true. Wow. A little over a year ago. And so it is a network of various video content creators. So we've got, you know, podcasts, whether they're like interview style or like news podcasts. We've got some gaming streamers. We're adding a cooking show, I think, here in like a month or two. But all, you know, liberty themed, liberty focused, free speech focused. And so the idea is to kind of conglomerate followings as well as provide a semi-uncancelable platform. So like right now, I can't live stream to Facebook, which unfortunately also means I can't live stream to the Free Speech Media Facebook, but I'm still on all the rest of the Free Speech Media streams, which are on Float, DLive, and Trovo. And we'll be adding Odyssey and Rockfin in the next 2 months. So, you know, anyone that follows me on Free Speech Media doesn't lose out, and they know to go look at the other streams to find me. I'm still on my own YouTube and my own Odyssey and Twitter, so most of my following will be all right. But I think I'm going to be pretty much done streaming to my own Facebook from here on out. I'll go back to doing it on the Free Speech Media one, but I'm just not. Like, I'm not going to start back up once the ban is over. I'm just trying to transition my entire Facebook following off of Facebook and fuck Facebook. And then I'll do the same with Twitter after I'm done with Facebook. But FSM, we've got content going up most days of the week. We'll be adding on some more shows. Hopefully, you'll be able to see Dissident in Chief on there here in the next few months.
Who knows, man? You never know.
I'd love to do a merger with Not a Real Network because they have some great people and some great content, and I think that we'd be able to mutually benefit a merger. I just think our name is better, so I'd want to keep our name.
Oh, hostile takeover. I love it. What a capitalist you are.
I mean, I just what I want to see out of this is I want to see people be successful. I want to see people who are good at spreading the message of liberty to be able to do it well. And there are a lot of facets of good content creation, and it is very unlikely that any one person can do all of the things. Running your own podcast, which you know, is tremendously difficult, and there are so many things that you could be doing to make it better that you just don't have the bandwidth to do. You know, like, not to pick apart your show, but like, you know, you could be doing it on video. You could be clipping those videos up and posting those clips. You could be like, you know, doing multiple promos leading up to the episode, and like have a bunch of posts that go out to promote when it drops, and like, you know, all of these things that could be happening, but it's just impossible to do all the things or be good at all of those things. To be able to do the video editing and the graphic design and the social media management and all of that stuff is impossible. And then if you want to add on like having a website and running a merch store, all that shit is just a whole nother thing. So the goal with the network is to, you know, divide and conquer, diversify strengths and tactics so that, you know, we can have one person run the Facebook accounts for the network and the people on the network. So one person is spending maybe like 10 hours a week managing a couple of Facebook pages, and that's all they have to do. That's a super manageable thing to do. But all of us on the network and the network itself is able to run a competent Facebook presence because of it. And then, you know, we have one person doing the Twitter, we have one person doing the video editing, we have one person doing the graphic design, we have another person running the website in the shop. And some of those roles have been filled over the last couple of weeks, and we're looking for people to fill other of those roles. So if you're listening to this and you spend too much time on Twitter and you'd like to help us out, we're looking for a Twitter platform manager and a Facebook platform manager. So hit me up. But at the moment, it's all going to be volunteer. But once we have the website and the merch store up and some more sponsorships going through and we actually get a little bit more of traction, we also have some donors lined up. These will all be paid positions and therefore, you know, actually useful and functional. And I don't like working with volunteers if I don't have to. I like to be able to pay my staff. I like to be able to have an exchange of goods. The benefit at the moment is that pretty much everyone who's working on the network is on the network. So it's just kind of like mutual promotion. So we all benefit from it, but I'd like to have some people that aren't podcasters help us out because
we're fucking useless, man. We can't fucking do it all.
Yeah. Like, I mean, can talk shit. Most people that can talk shit can't edit shit. Like, it's just an unfortunate reality.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I'm all right at it, but you know, I'm also doing a lot of changing of this podcast. Not a lot, but like I'm making it a little bit more professional, like adding some shit here, maybe not having this happen where I have just a blank white screen on my fucking podcast here. But yeah, like, and then speaking of podcasts, like I know you have your own that's on Free Speech Media. To tell me about it, because I know it's called Fight for Liberty, which is funny because your name is Fight, haha. But like,
yeah, it's spelled like my last name, F-I-T-E. So,
and are you doing just typical like libertarian shit, or are you, or what's the angle that makes it different than just literally sitting down and fucking talking shit like this?
So, the goal of Fight for Liberty, that's F-I-T-E, then the number 4, Liberty is how you can find it on pretty much everything. The goal of the show is to talk to people who are quote unquote fighting for liberty, and kind of get to humanize them and make them, you know, talk about some real life stuff, but mostly, you know, in there, get out tangible advice and like actionable goals and ways that people watching can do the things that the people I'm talking to are doing. So like, I think probably my favorite episode that I've done so far, and actually like one of the main people that caused the rebrand of the show, like I was like, I want people like him on my show, and then spent 3 months rebranding and then finally got him on the show, was Michael Bolden from the 10th Amendment Center. He is an amazing activist who's done almost nothing with the actual party itself. He spent his entire time doing legislative work with the duopoly parties, and arguably has done more for liberty than pretty much anybody else that I know and talk to. Like a spinoff of his organization in Missouri just nullified all federal gun laws in the state of Missouri this year. Like, that's a huge accomplishment that like no one in the LP can be like, hey, I did that for my state. Like, no one, just unfortunately no one. And so we were talking, you know, we talked a little bit about life, but from that episode, I've actually had multiple people tell me that they watched that episode and they're starting an organization like the 10th Amendment Center in their state. And, you know, I'm going to like, and Michael's been really awesome and responsive since that episode. I think it went really well and we kind of hit it off and we're now friends. And so he's going to be helping me with these people and getting these organizations up and running. And like that episode did some stuff. And so that's the one that I'm the most proud of. Like, because we talked about exactly how to do it and what to do and why you can actually get more done with, in some ways, less work by avoiding electoral politics and just going straight for where the power currently is. And so, yeah, I'm really proud of that episode. But that's kind of the goal of the show is, you know, I also had like Dan Smotz from the System is Down podcast on to talk about video editing and how you can use those skills to fight for liberty. You know, I'm trying to get, gonna have like Top Lobster on in a couple weeks to talk about using graphic design and art to fight for liberty. And so it's just like, regardless of what your talents are and your skills are and your passions are, you can watch my show and hopefully one of the episodes piques your interest and you go, oh, I could do that. And then in 2 years, you're an awesome, popular activist for liberty doing a thing.
It's like you're a fucking, you're like a walking, talking fucking Uncle Sam for fucking liberty shit where you're just like, you can do this, you can do that, you can do this, yeah, you,
that's the goal,
join the cause, yeah.
Well, I think the movement and especially the party has been bogged down by a couple of like really specific organizational structures, it's either like the party structure or the campaign structure. And so when you join the movement, you're very quickly peer pressured into either running for office, running a county or state party, or running a campaign.
Or doing a fucking podcast.
I mean, or doing a podcast, which honestly isn't much better. Like that's still only four options. And people get siloed. You know, you're either a chair, a secretary, or a treasurer. You're either a campaign manager, a comms director, a field director, a policy director. And even that is like rare to have a campaign that has all of those positions filled adequately by different people that can do the task correctly. A lot of times people just get siloed into candidates. We end up having like a dozen candidates who have zero staff and none of them are actually suitable candidates. So what I'm trying to do with the show is show people the multitude of avenues that they can take in their lives and still end up making their lives more tangibly freer and making the people around them's lives more tangibly freer in the process. And it's not just one of those like seven roles that I just said. You know, you can be a video editor like Dan Smotz or a graphic designer like Top Lobster or a blogger like Michael Bolden that turns stuff into actually like making the world a better place. And so yeah, that's kind of the goal, is to break out of those silos, because I think that they're really damaging and they burn people out. And most people, you know, aren't good secretaries. Like that's a difficult job and you have to be good at it. And like, don't make someone like me a secretary. I would be terrible. I've been asked to be a secretary like seven times. No, it's never going to happen. Never. I'd be awful at it. You don't want me at it.
You're over here like, I don't need to be a secretary. One, because like I'm terrible at secretary shit. Two, I'm not going to be very happy if you smack me on the ass when you walk by your office.
I mean, that I'm actually fine with.
Only if you're a really attractive male or female. He doesn't fucking judge. It's fine. I mean, I would probably be a terrible secretary because I get one boss gives me lip and then I might punch him in the face. I don't know.
But like, and the secretary role for the party is like a whole other animal, because it's like, you know, you have to go to every meeting. You have to be paying very close attention during the meetings. You have to take minutes and you have to retype them up and upload them quickly after the meeting. Like, you have to be vigilant and on your computer and like have some of your shit together. Like, you can't be an ADHD riddled moron like myself that's like rarely sitting down by their desk and most of the time on the road. Like, that person's not a good secretary.
No. And then,
sorry, Karen Ann.
Oof. Are you throwing up a little shade palm there?
Just a tiny bit. But mostly, mostly because of the point that I'm actually trying to make, which is that people like that are better elsewhere. Like, I think Karen Ann Harlos is a fucking amazing activist and a great asset to this movement and this party. I think that her being a secretary of the national or state party is a waste of time and talent. Like, that is the most boring, pointless, meaningless job that you could give somebody with that much, like, crowd appeal and fire and passion. And even name recognition, like, people know her, like, she's good at what she does. She's a great parliamentarian. Like, there's just so many better things that she could be doing than being the secretary.
Bring back boring secretaries. That's what David's running on. I knew it.
I mean, my secretary candidate's not exactly boring, but he's a better secretary.
And much more willing to get smacked in the ass.
Much more willing, actually.
And on that positive note, give me your fucking socials, and then I can get you the fuck out of here, because it's midday, and you're probably fucking hungry. And it's about, it's 4:20. Oh, shit. There you go.
Taking a hit as we speak.
Man, look at that good fucking timing.
I have a wake and bake mug that is literally a coffee mug and a pipe.
Can you actually put coffee in there too, or no?
Yeah, I've been drinking out of it the whole time.
Oh, and then it's got a little bowl built into the side. That's nice.
It's a pretty awful bowl to use, but I felt like doing it in the moment because I was drinking coffee out of it.
There you go.
But yeah, so you can follow me on Facebook. I think it's DFight4 or just David Fight. There's a page, or Fight for Liberty. Like I said, FITE, then the number 4. Twitter, it's at David Fight and at Fight for Liberty. Float is this. I don't have a personal float. It's just at Fight for Liberty. And I just got a Getter account yesterday. We'll see how that goes. And that's at David Fight. So follow me on all those. YouTube channel is Fight for Liberty. Odyssey is Fight for Liberty. We're going to be trying to pivot heavily to the anti-establishment platforms like Float and Odyssey going forward. So definitely follow me over there.
Well, hell yeah, brother. I appreciate you coming on. And then, oh, hey, just a little reminder. We did this like a month ago, but then technical difficulties happened. So let's hope we get this thing out. But anyway, it was a pleasure for you to come on. And then, yeah, I'll talk to you later, bud.
Thank you. It was a pleasure coming on.